I'm on my bike and I'm ready to go.
Me and Theo theorize over beer at the ship and out-hip all the misers and take strips out of liars. He sits me down and he tries to explain. He says the bada bada bill, bang a button on the radar, I'm a cutting on the systematic californication, and a license application is a fish abomination and a random allocation. Got a copywritten melanoma, sassafras, and wireless device. Okay, stop. I get it. Some asshole lied. And then he says, the crash around my villain nation, lawyerific pornication, threatifies the only honest hacker, I'm a runner rider in the cyber side of documentation, universal and a grammatic code of habitation, the Zeisengation. Okay, stop, I get it. Some asshole said he was open, but he was only open for business. I get it. Where's my pencils? Bring me my mic.
Nobody cares. These guys are really weird.
Then he has another beer and he gets all, you know, pushy. Make Puffy kill pussies? And too much thinking and kitchen sinking, the drawings are tunes, I should say, where a fish can talk, be an agent, a hitman, or walk and ride horses, and forces my hand to make Puffy a spy or a cowboy, or why a little girl in a dream, and fake Floyd is the theme, and squeeze in five concepts every time, every song, and the geeks and Theo lose it if I draw the device wrong. It's four little buttons, not five, Ty, and pretty soon I'll be losing my mind, cause it's a f***ing cartoon.
Welcome to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. I'm Ifni. This is CITR 101.9 FM. I have a treat for you. It's a piece of found art, and it found me, so I want to help it find you, too. So sit down, strap on your seatbelt. It's called The Symptoms of Falling Asleep at the Wheel. Typically, a car being driven by a driver falling asleep either runs into a vehicle in front or weaves and or drifts off the carriageway. Variability in speed is not so reliable an index and depends upon the force required to depress the accelerator. Falling asleep is accompanied by reduced muscle tone throughout much of the body, for example, head rolling, and foot pressure on the accelerator pedal will relax. Thus, the outcome with respect to vehicle speed will depend on how much the accelerator pedal return spring counteracts foot pressure. The scientific literature is unclear about the more subtle changes to steering that may occur during sleepy driving. The response time in applying the brakes in an emergency is commonly thought to be impaired by sleepiness. But this may not always be the case, as laboratory studies indicate that the driver records and or other objective data. Wait a minute. Wow. And we break because only page 69 and 64 and 65 have found me. So it will forever be a mystery, the rest of this. But if you'd like to find out more, that was from Jay Horn and L. Reiner, Transportation Research, Part F4, 2001, pages 63 to 74. And what we've brought to you today is a portion of page 69. So if you note any of these symptoms in a car, either ahead of you, behind you, around you, please take evasive action. To those of you who are driving right now, please be careful. Look out for little wheeled objects we like to call bicycles. And if you are on your bicycle, please look out for those big, heavy behemoths that are unfortunately warming the planet at a rate faster than we can slow down or stop. This show today, we're going to be talking about freedom. We're going to be talking about, again, continuing on with the information wants to be free idea. And also, communities want to be free, and farms want to be free, and the gateway wants to be free of implementation. I'm going to be joined by a couple of folks in the studio here today. It's kind of exciting. We actually have warm bodies with us. We've got Bill McGrath, who is a founding member of Vancouver Fair Copyright Coalition, and he's going to be speaking with us. Also, Jeff Glass, who is also an organizer from the same folks. We're going to be talking a little bit later in the show to them about Bill C-61 and why you should care and be extremely concerned. And also, we're going to have two bicycle traffic reports today, if the forces converge appropriately. Again, my name is Ifni. This is the Pedal Revolutionary Show. David, of course, is in the studio with magic fingers working the board. I'd like to remind you all that this coming Friday is Critical Mass. It's the monthly bike ride that is the source of much entertainment for the media and entertainment for cyclists and entertainment both high, low brow and intermediate for car drivers in our fair city. And we'll be talking about a few events upcoming as well, but I think we should listen to another song. That song that you first heard, by the way, was from the OpenBSD website.
It's called Open Box.
It's called Open Box.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave. OpenBSD, we'll talk a little bit more about what that means, but at any rate, you can download and listen to a lot of their songs on their website. It's openbsd.org. Imagine, the software community puts out music. Did you know? Yes, they do. So please strap your seatbelts in and listen to a little bit more music. Is this OpenBSD too, Dave? This is also OpenBSD.
From the ocean far upstream, nothing to his name but a code and a dream, looking for the legendary inland sea where the water was deep and clean and free. But the town he found had suffered a blow. Fish were dying because the water was low. Fat catfish named a Diamond Dolls plugged the stream with copyright laws. He said, my water's good and my water's free, so Ponderosa, you're gonna thank me. Then he bottled it up and he labeled it mine. They opened and poured, but they ran out of time. So Puff made a brand and he tanned his hide, said, this is the mark of too much pride. Tied to a horse, set the tail on fire, slapped her on the ass and the water went higher. Ponderosa Puff wouldn't take no guff. Water ought to be clean and free. good for a spell in town. But then one day, dang water turned brown. Coming to the rescue, Mayor Reed, he said, this here filter's all y'all need. But it didn't take long for the filter plugged, full of mud and crud and bugs. Bull said, gotta be a gooder way. Mayor said, hell no, she's okay. The water's fine on the open range, and he passed a law that it couldn't change. No freeze, no boil, no frolicking young. Puff took him aside, said, this is wrong. And then he found the mayor was out in the crud, so he took him down in a cloud of blood. He said, mayor's learned he's done been mean, so they did it right, and the water went clean. That Ponderosa Puff wouldn't take no guff. Water ought to be clean and free. And he said things right with his open PSD. So once again, it was right, but then the lake went dry, she was gone again. Fish started flipping and flopping about, yelling, mercy, pup, it's a doggone drought. So he rolled up gulch till he hit the lake of Apache fish, they was on the take. They'd built a dam that was made of rules. Now Pup was pissed and he lost his cool. I'm sick and tired of these gall darn words and laws and bureaucratic nerds. You're full of beans and killing my town. And if you all don't shut her down, well, I'll hang a licking on everyone, you sons of bitch and greedy scum. So he blew the dam and let her haul, cause water ought to be free for all. That Ponderosa Puff wouldn't take no guff. Water ought to be clean and free. So he fought the fight and he set things right with his open PSD. With his open PSD. That's right.
Welcome back. Again, that was off of one of the Open BSD albums. That was a song called Ponderosa Puff, and Puff is the one of the mascots for Open BSD, which is an alternative operating system. It's free. It's open source. We're going to talk a little bit about what that means later on. But all you need to know for now is that that song was written by Ty Samaka, who I used to date, and we used to go out, and he's got a band, and the band is called the Plaid Tongue Devils, and they're from Canada, so that was Canadian content for those of you who are feeling patriotic today. On the line, we have someone who would like to talk to all of us and tell us what the scene is like on the street. Ben, are you there?
I'm here.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
What's going on with you these days?
Oh, you know, busy. Organizing a big rally.
Yes, and I love the title, No Truckin' Freeways.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Do you want to tell us about what's going on with that?
Well, basically, folks who are concerned about the Gateway Project, which is the twinning of the Portman Bridge as well as the widening of Highway 1 and the building of this new South Fraser Perimeter Road, they're calling it, is a really, really big project that has impacts on people all over the place. So we decided to pick sort of a symbolic location right where the South Fraser Perimeter Road would meet up with Highway 1 right at the edge of the Portman Bridge, sort of visible from the Portman Bridge in this park called Robin Park in Surrey. And we're going to bring people together from different community organizations and from environmental organizations and concerned citizens and folks who want to ride their bike out there and have a good time. And we're going to have a big rally this Saturday, the 27th. And there's going to be shuttle buses leaving from Gateway SkyTrain Station throughout the day for anybody who wants to come on transit. And, there's all kinds of information about it on our website, gatewaytowhat.org.
Excellent. And there is going to be a bicycle ride that's organized to go out there so people can ride out together and then maybe either SkyTrain the last leg because, unfortunately, one of the bridges concerned does not accommodate bicycle transportation. So you mentioned the gatewaytowhat.org website. And, of course, there's also the old standard gatewaysucks.org if you want to find out some more background as well. And you're kind of in charge of what aspect of this rally?
Right, good question. I'm the Healthy Communities Campaigner for the Western Canada Wilderness Committee, and we've been meeting with these different community groups, environmental groups, and basically it's my full-time job at the moment to work on stopping or at least drastically changing the Gateway Project. Mm-hmm. So I'm working with different community groups and with other environmental groups, and they're sort of all over the place. I mean, you know, there's so many different concerns ranging from burn fog to people who are concerned about the expansion of Delta Port, and you know, any number of other concerns. So it's my job to kind of try to pull all these different elements together, and at the moment that means organizing this big rally.
So you're a humanitarian.
Sure.
There's thumbs up all over in the studio here. People are going, uh-huh, yeah, that sounds good. Now, I wanted to, I know you're kind of out in our fair city, and I wanted to ask you for a little bit of a bicycle traffic report since we've got you on the line. You can be our eyes and ears out in the world, Ben.
Sure.
What do you see?
Well,
what's it look like out there?
It's a gray day in Vancouver, and cyclists are, you know, taking their life in their own hands as angry, you know, commuters are backed up in traffic and honking at each other. I saw one guy turning a corner at high speed with a little bit of, you know, rain kind of in his face, and he looked stressed out to me. I felt for him as he biked by.
Yeah. What was he wearing?
What was he wearing? It was kind of a spandexy getup. He looked very shiny. You know, the spandex was glistening in the rainy kind of glisteniness. He was definitely the most colorful thing on the road.
Oh, my God. He must have been a crime fighter.
He looked like a superhero to me. I was actually kind of impressed. He was going a lot faster than seemed to make any sense to my brain as I walked by.
Excellent. Now, this is the time of year, of course, where folks need to start breaking out their Wellingtons and their little rain capes. This might actually be, and I know this is a freedom show, but you might have to give your back freedom from rain stripe by breaking out your fenders and getting them on your bike. I was going to say bumpers. Ugh, that's a bad habit of mine. I call them bumpers.
It's not very slip of some kind,
man. Yeah, it's not a very chic. It betrays my driving past. Well, Ben, thank you so much for taking the time to kind of give us a little bit of an idea about what's going on out there. I will actually add that statistically speaking, when there is more congestion, actually it becomes safer for cyclists because the cars aren't actually moving so fast. And it also becomes safer for other drivers, ironically, as well, because people have to drive a little bit more slowly. So I just wanted to put that out there, that it may not be as dangerous as you think. But remember, folks, the roads are a little bit slippery. You may not be, you may have forgotten what that's like to cycle on, so do be aware.
Can I add one thing, Yiffy?
Yes.
I just wanted to say one thing about Gateway and cycling. There's been a big push from within the folks that are trying to sell Gateway to us to say that there's going to be all this cycling infrastructure that will be incorporated into the funding of the Gateway project.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say, don't believe the hype. Take a closer look at it. I mean, the one major piece of cycling infrastructure that would be added is literally the shoulder of a new 6-lane freeway that's going to be used for diesel trucks going between Delta Port and Highway 1.
It sounds so picturesque.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not a project that has anything to do with increasing funding for cycling infrastructure. They've just gotten really good at wrapping together all these different things. They're saying that there's all this transit funding that's all of a sudden part of it, even though we're running deficits for TransLink. And they're saying that there's going to be all kinds of cycling infrastructure. But really, it's like, here's a paved road with a little shoulder that, you know, if you're brave enough, you can ride on it. But it's not greenways being built throughout the region. That's not what this is about.
Wait a minute. What's that smell? Oh, it's tokenism. It's
there
tokenism.
You
Do you smell that? It's a kind of a burning smell.
Yeah.
It must be fossil fuels.
Exactly. There's lots of misinformation out there. That's why we set up Gateway to What, to try to just make it a one-stop shop where you can find all the information about what's actually going on.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, Ben, thank you so much for all your good work, and good luck on Saturday. This is
Thanks.
Coming up Saturday, September the 27th at 1 p.m. Robin Park, Birdland in Surrey. Go to gateway2what.org for more information. Ben, keep rocking in the free world.
Thanks. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope to see you there.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, that was cool. Tireless person there, Ben West. All right, so I think we should... you guys want to hear another song? Anybody? Yeah. Okay, I'm getting complicity here, so let's hear some more music, Dave.
Now, we're up to our long-distance dedication. And this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in Cincinnati, Ohio. And here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's come start again. From coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please.
Casey, this is a dumb son of a bitch.
That's the letter U and the numeral 2. The four-man band features Adam Clayton on bass, Larry Mullen on drums, Dave Evans, nicknamed The Edge, on... This is bullshit. Nobody cares. These guys are from England, and who gives a shit?
Oh, yeah.
Just a lot of wasted names that don't mean diddly shit.
For sure. You don't know where you're at. There's so much shit about you.
This is bullshit.
Sounds like he's portable, yeah.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah, it is quality.
Diddly shit.
Yeah, right.
Nobody cares.
It's getting stronger all the time here.
Snuggles.
Yeah.
Snuggles.
Oh, yeah.
Snuggles.
Oh, yeah.
He was a little dog named Snuggles.
This is American Top 40. This is American Top 40. This is bullshit.
This is bullshit. We can't get all the men, you little fucking twin cocksucker.
Numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions, and then you got to go into somebody dying. God damn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Why are we doing these instrumentals? Because we got them? I don't understand it.
This is also nothing new.
I don't understand it.
This is also nothing new.
I don't understand it.
I think that people read more into the music than is really there.
Well, somebody find out the goddamn answer in the 50s.
They considered it vulgar and despicable to have songs like Each Week Tonight, Let's Do What I Call For, the All of You I Call For. Those were considered euphemisms for something dirty.
Who gives a shit?
Some vulgar, dirty act.
Diddly shit.
They can't do trio things, so they use the word damn with band on the radio.
God damn it.
In the 60s, it was a song called Louie Louie.
God damn it.
Upside back.
God damn it.
Every way they could play it, looking for the dirty message.
I
never found the dirty message. The FCC was brought in.
Oh, fuck.
In the 70s, people went through the same experience, looking for the dirtiness of the song. I really don't think that the satanic message is there. Goddamn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a fucking up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication. It's a last goddamn time I want somebody to use his fucking brain to not come out of a goddamn record that is that's up-tempo, and I gotta talk about a fucking dog dying.
That guy gets fucked with so much shit. Super shit head again. Who knows? You might be the straightest kid in town.
What is it? Fucking ponderous, man. Ponderous. Fucking ponderous. This is American Top 40, right here on the radio station you grew up with. Music Radio 138. Oh, fuck.
Oh, fuck you, Liz. Fuck you too, Richard.
Oh, fuck you, Liz.
Fuck you too, Richard.
Yeah, I'd love
Oh, that was great. Okay, such profanity. If you're wondering about the source of that profanity, for those of you who might remember Casey Kasem, Mr. Helmet Hair, that was Casey Kasem swearing his face off. It was on a song by the group Negative Land. I suggest if you don't know Negative Land, please go and check them out. They are incredibly creative, bizarre, iconic, I think is the word. Negative Land is spelled with no second E, so it's Negative No E Land. But that song actually, as you probably recognize, there were some bits and pieces of U2 threaded in there. The song, unfortunately, while it was made in the 90s, was not able to be released until years later, primarily because the record label actually was suing the pants off of Negative Land about the song. And the band U2 actually didn't actually know. They didn't necessarily have a problem with sampling and all that stuff. So kind of a sad story, interesting story. Check out Wikipedia if you want to read the rest of the soap opera that was U2's lost song by Negative Land. I just love Casey Kasem swearing his face off. That just makes me so happy. Okay, so we're going to get on with the show, and again, we're on the Freedom Train today, so I've got two gentlemen who've been extremely patient in the studio with me today, one to my left, one to my right. David is at 12 o'clock. So I've got on my left Bill McGrath. Bill, hi, how you doing?
How you doing?
I'm good, Bill. How are you? Now, not you bad. Are a founding member of the Vancouver Fair Copyright Coalition and director of Vancouver Linux Users Group, and you are the principal author of the Canadian Declaration of User Rights. That sounds really exciting.
Well, I'm trying to impress people.
It's working for... I'm impressed.
Okay, great.
Can you tell by my face?
Yeah. Yeah, no problem.
I've also got to my right Jeff Glass, who's here. He's also an organizer for Fair Copyright Vancouver, and he's a free and open source software developer. And he also has something of a background to do with the Commons of Ideas, which sounds like another exciting area. Are you also trying to impress people, Jeff?
Not really.
No? You leave that to Bill.
That's right.
That's my 40, yeah.
Okay. Well, so I'm really happy that you guys came in to talk to us today, and I'd like to kind of give, maybe get you to give people a bit of an idea about what you're working on and what are these organizations that we've mentioned. What are these organizations trying to do? The Vancouver Fair Copyright Coalition and such.
Well, I guess we're over the past decade or so, there have been a number of attempts by the federal government to... bring in legislation to ratify outdated treaties from that were initiated at the World Intellectual Property Organization, or WIPO. And these have met with considerable resistance. And so we've been trying to educate legislators to a certain extent and criticize, you know, proposed legislation and try to move things forward in a more balanced and reasonable way. So that's, I guess, what we're about. It's like fighting copyright legislation.
And what are these antiquated things that you're referring to?
Well, the WIPO Treaty was originally developed in Europe. Organizations like the Motion Picture Association of America, big bags of money. They went over to Europe in the early 90s, and they started, you know, saying, we need a treaty. And so around 1996, there was a treaty came out, and Canada signed it. So basically what it tries to do is outlaw the circumvention of technological protections of copyrighted material. So this is before the Internet, the popularization of the Internet, the invention of the DVD, the invention of the iPod, a lot of the popular electronics that we take for granted now. So this treaty is really old and outdated, and you'll constantly hear a government saying, we have to ratify this treaty, we have to ratify this treaty. So it's like you're talking 1995, you know, and technology has moved on, you know. And it's like we need to do things with our technology today that this treaty would make illegal. And that's what Bill C-61 is doing. It's bringing in a provision of that treaty, the anti-circumvention concept, which would make it illegal for people to circumvent any technological protections, such as digital rights management. And so when they do that, you know, you'll be liable for quite a lot of fines and things of that nature. So if you download a tune from the internet or, you know, circumvent it, rip it off a CD or something like that, you're going to be breaking the law.
And I think what people don't realize necessarily is that I think everybody's kind of many people are familiar with BitTorrenting and how that is. Mm-hmm. That is maybe a more clear-cut case, but I think they're not so aware that if you buy a CD at the store, you take it home, and you maybe want to copy it for yourself, mm-hmm. you can only do that under this treaty one time. And right. if you do more than that, then you're breaking the law, and you're even though you've purchased the CD, and despite the blank media levy, which maybe people may be aware of, what was it, back in the mid-90s, I think the blank media levy came out, and it was a result of a lot of lobbying by groups like the Recording Artists of America. And they said, we're losing all this money because people are copying the CDs that they buy or the tapes that they buy from us. And so the Canadian government said, okay, well, we'll make a blank media levy. We'll put a little tax. Whenever you buy blank tapes or blank CDs, you'll have to pay an extra 10 cents per or blank mini discs. I remember being particularly annoyed about it when they did that because I wasn't copying music with them. I was doing like artistic sound recordings and stuff. But the blank media levy then is supposed to be given back to the recording industry itself, and that's supposed to kind of mollify them so that they won't go bankrupt because, of course, they're always on the brink of bankrupt. They've been on the brink of bankrupt for the last 100 years. But, you know, so in my understanding, for them to say, okay, you can only copy it once, well, aren't they already being paid off by the blank media levy? So why are they then able to have a leg to stand on?
Well, you know, that's a good point. You know, when you consider that you probably have that recording for, you know, when you were a kid, you bought a Britney Spears CD, and say when you're 85 years old and you're, you know, you want to dance in a nursing home somewhere, it's like, okay, I want to play that CD again, you know, and it's like, so how many times are you going to have to copy that between, you know, when you're a teenager and when you're a senior citizen? So the legislation will allow you to make one copy. You know, mm-hmm. one copy for backup purposes. Well, you're going to need to make a lot of other copies. You're going to upgrade your computer. You're going to transfer it to other devices and so on. And that's going to go on for decades, but it's like they don't seem to recognize that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so the levy is sort of a stopgap measure. It's important to understand that it's like it's still illegal to make that copy, those copies. It's just the levy, it just sort of creates a gray area.
A Band-Aid?
Exactly. It's sort of, you know, it's still illegal to make that copy, but, you know, well, the artists are being compensated, and that's sort of the way it's going.
What always bugs me is that the industry always brings out the artists and, like, holds them up and says, look at the poor artists, they're not getting anything from this. But the recording industry has never really been particularly caring humanitarian towards the artists. They exploit them, and they just don't want to necessarily see other people exploiting them, and they don't necessarily want to see themselves what they consider to be exploited, which I think is interesting. And what I think is really interesting, too, is if you look at the history of this, and we talk about, you want to talk about like the VHS and kind of the battle that went down about that, about, you know, having recordable VHS tapes, or I know some of your guys' materials have mentioned, for example, radio. Do you want to talk about that, Jeff? Maybe get in on this?
Yeah, actually, I'd like to talk about digital locks, if I may.
Sure.
Which is what Bill calls technological protection measures, which is what the WIPO Treaty refers to. Most media talk about them as digital locks. And the implications go a long way beyond limiting what you can do with your CDs, because the lock isn't really something that's in the CD. It's actually something that's in your CD player, or your computer, or your iPod, or even your cell phone. And a digital lock is really just a piece of software that dictates what that device can do, and it can dictate anything it likes. And that doesn't have to do anything with copyright. It could prevent you from taking your cell phone and unlocking it. It could prevent you from watching movies from overseas on your DVD player. Some people are concerned that it could prevent you from getting aftermarket service for your car from anyone other than an authorized dealer. Anything with a chip in it could have a digital lock, and what this law does is it makes it illegal to open that lock, even though you own the DVD player, the iPod, the car, what have you. And the minister seems to have some understanding. He's no longer the minister, I guess, because the government is dissolved, but... he mentioned that cell phone...
Which minister?
Jim Prentice, Minister of Industry.
Okay.
It's actually interesting that this is being brought in by the Minister of Industry, considering that they're saying that it's for artists. But he said, well, the fact that you can't unlock legally your cell phone in Canada isn't such a problem because you could go to another country and do that. I mean, of course, Canada's laws don't apply elsewhere. But I think this is one of the great concerns, is that the digital locks... can outlaw all sorts of legitimate behavior that really have nothing to do with copyright. Yeah. Even within the realm of copyright, the digital locks have to be centrally controlled, in effect. Because if you watch a DVD player on your a DVD on your DVD player, you need to have, in a sense, the key and the lock. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to watch the DVD. And this means essentially that it's always possible to unlock digital locks, and this is what we have seen. If someone breaks the protection on a DVD or a CD or what have you, or on the iPhone, for example, that once it's broken, that content can be shared around the world on the internet. So it's almost impossible to keep the cat, not almost, it is impossible to keep the cat in the bag. But, so pirates will be able to continue pirating things.
Sure.
And I think that in the United States, we've seen that they introduced legislation like this 10 years ago, and file sharing and illegal downloading and so on has increased. One of the problems I see that I'm really concerned about is that the people who are absolutely prohibited, in effect, are the people who make a living doing this. Artists, innovators, software developers, they can't break the locks because they have to make their work public. They have to share it so everybody will know. You know, it's one thing for someone on their own to copy CD to their iPod. Realistically, they won't get caught.
Mm-hmm. And to maybe make it concrete, just for people who are out there listening, if someone writes a free program to play DVDs on, okay, and then you buy a DVD at the store or you rent one from the video store and you take it home and you try to play it on mm-hmm. that free software, it may not work, right? And it may not work because of what I understand to be licensing? How does that work?
Well, I think one of the things this the Bill C-61 would have made it illegal for someone to write that program.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, because you would have had to circumvent those locks to write a program that circumvents those locks. And as I understand it anyway, you know, that would be illegal. You wouldn't be allowed to mm-hmm. write that program, okay?
Because I know, for example, on a standard distribution of Ubuntu Linux, which is an alternative mm-hmm. operating system, right, to Windows or Mac, and it's perfectly legal, and people mm-hmm. people download mm-hmm. it and they install it all the time, and it's shared between communities, mm-hmm. and it's created yep. by the yep. software community. Mm-hmm. If you take kind of the factory install of Ubuntu Linux and you try to put a video that you rent, like a DVD that you rent from the video store in it, you have to, it won't actually play. You have to actually download an additional piece of software that's considered to be illegal just mm-hmm. to get that DVD to play, which
right.
is bizarre, really, right? Because you're doing what should be considered a perfectly legal transaction. I've got an mm-hmm. operating system mm-hmm. that belongs to me, my computer belongs to me, the DVD I paid to rent,
yeah.
and yet I'm being prevented. So really, yes. what we're looking at is punishing the people who are
yes.
just trying to kind of do things that are regular
yep.
things.
And like you say, using Ubuntu, it would be illegal to play that DVD. And it's like, it's just there. The software wouldn't be allowed to use it legally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing I want to point out is that if you wanted to write software to play a DVD legally, you would need to get permission from the DVD's consortium, which is basically a bunch of large media and technology companies who decide who can play DVDs and even, you know, what they can do with them. If you've ever had a DVD and you can't skip over those annoying ads at the beginning,
yeah,
that's something that they get to dictate.
Did we vote for them? Did I miss something?
I'm afraid we might.
I mean, I don't always pay perfect attention, and I try to keep up with the news, but yeah. I guess I didn't miss anything. We didn't.
No.
Did we?
That's why I get most of my stuff from the library, actually. But if you're an artist, though, and you're trying to get your work out there, you're going to have to go through the channels that these people have created. They've created their own channel, and nobody else is able to use it, and it's in all our technology.
Mm. Yeah.
We found last week, I think it was, that Apple's iPhone, Apple controls, through digital locks, they control the software on the iPhone. And if you are a software developer who creates and sells even software for the iPhone, they can shut you down if they want to. And they did this with a competitor to iTunes.
Are you talking about Sanuti?
I don't know the name of the program,
okay.
I'm afraid. But there was a piece of software that was a competitor to iTunes, and they decided they didn't want competition, so they shut it down. Now, if you're an artist who's trying to get your music out to customers, and you want to be able to control who gets it or to get to a wide audience, mm-hmm. you have to go through these guys in the middle who are going to be able to control the channel.
Mm-hmm.
So I think artists have a lot to lose from this
mm-hmm.
because they're really not in control of the technology, and the technology is going to dictate what people can do.
And basically, digital rights management is, of course, a way not for, for communities and artists and individuals to benefit, but it's a way for the industry to kind of suck everything, like to basically have more control over what you do with their product and to make more money out of it if they possibly can.
I think so.
And it's interesting that you mentioned iTunes, and there is something that was called Sanuti, and Sanuti was a program that looks a lot like iTunes, but it enables you to take music and download it from your own iPod, because the way that digital rights management works, of course, with iPods is that you can load music onto them, but you can't get it off, even if it's yours. And so Sanuti, which is iTunes spelled backwards, was a way for people to actually like get their own music off, or get music off of their own iPod, which is, it's a bizarre thing. And I think the free and open source software community has a really important contribution to make in terms of raising people's consciousness about what is inappropriate and what should be, what your rights really should be, and what they could be and what they're not right now.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting too that it's called digital locks. When really, it's like locking something up that's someone's possession. No, it's not. It's just locking something and making it basically dysfunctional. So it's like a dysfunction that's added to these products.
This is a concern of a lot of the people who oppose this, and some artists are worried that if you buy something that's locked, content that's locked, say a DVD or a piece of software, it's less functional for you. So it's an incentive to pirate. And I've read a number of examples of people who bought video games. Say Spore was a recent example, who found that the DRM didn't work properly, so they went and got a pirated version so they could use what they'd paid for.
And I think something maybe much more concerning, too, beyond just the kind of the entertainment aspect, is also that an artist's ability to do satire of works that are out there and personalities that are out there is severely inhibited when you're actually breaking the law by using that. I mean, you look at artists that were trailblazing like Negative Land, and now we're kind of at the point where, okay, if it's fair use, at least Canada has been pretty on the ball as far as fair use goes. If it is, well, you're, no?
No,
that's one of the things we're trying to get them to is to expand the fair use and fair dealing rights in Canada.
Yeah.
We had an instance, I think it was this week, maybe it was last week, of the Conservative Party for the election. They were using news clips in one of their ads, and they were accused of copyright infringement. And it's rather difficult to do politics in the country when the news agencies get to determine who can use what. Documentary filmmakers are outraged because they may be locked out of historical content. I mean, these digital locks can lock up stuff that's in the public domain. You could have an instance where you've got video from the turn of the century and there's no copyright holder anymore, and you can't get to it because it's locked up, and it's illegal to break the lock. Mm-hmm. And even if you are allowed to break the lock, the tools for breaking the lock are illegal. They're not allowed to exist, mm-hmm. in effect. Mm-hmm.
While we're on the topic, I just want to mention to folks, if you are interested in free commons stuff that's, you know, in a great online archive, there is something called internetarchive.org. So it's internet-archive.org, or you can go to the Prelinger Archives, and those are fantastic compendiums of this great content that still has been... It's basically an archive that was collected by an archivist who loves that idea of having things available to people and preserving those things. And so there are people doing good work out there. Do you guys want to talk about maybe who should be... I know there were a couple of other mentions. I know data forensics, you guys have mentioned, is threatened by this kind of copyright control, that you won't be able to break locks on things in order to do investigations, for example.
Security research, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's in the United States, the copyright law there now is, you know, they've implemented the anti-circumvention law, and it's put a chill on digital research. This, you know, prominent scientists have simply retired simply because they can't do their work anymore. So it's, you know, significant, and we could get the same thing in this country. And it's worth pointing out that, you know, countries like New Zealand, for example, have ratified this treaty, but they've done it in a much more enlightened way, which allows for circumventions for legitimate purposes. And it doesn't, you know, come up with this blanket prohibition to throw across all tools and all software and all that sort of thing. So it's like if your purpose is a good one, you know, you can circumvent and you can do your work and so on. But, you know, we don't have that kind of enlightenment in Canada just yet.
But you're intent on bringing it to the world and impressing people at the same time.
Oh, my God, yes.
Now, what should people do? Where should people go for information, and what should they do when they get a hold of that information? What would you like to see? What would you like the public's response to be, and how can they get involved?
Well, there's, I guess, our website and our little group locally here in Vancouver, and we're trying to start some societies at UBC and SFU. So our website is Well, it's the Vancouver Fair Copyright Coalition is www.wiki.faircopy.ca. I guess you could...
There are two sites. There's www.faircopy.ca, which is general information, and we're coordinating our activities through wiki.faircopy.ca.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
A lot of our information is on the wiki, so that's where
right
we're working.
Yeah. So you can see the front end and the back end.
Exactly. Yeah. But what we're doing is like we're meeting with MPs, and it's like it's great for that because we have people who are from ridings all across Vancouver, and so they can go to MPs and sitting MPs and say, you know, look, we're your constituents and we're concerned about copyright, and that's having an effect. You know, it's like. The Liberals' bill C-60, which preceded C-61, didn't have broader exemptions. It was good, but not as good as it could have been. Mm-hmm. And they've started, as a result of the meetings that we've had, we've seen some election time rhetoric, but we've seen them sort of willing to consult now, and sort of they see that there are broader exemptions that are needed, and a lot of unintended consequences to the anti-circumvention provision. So,
You look like you want to add something.
No.
You sure?
Okay.
I've got some other sources here that you mentioned. People can go and visit Michael Geist's website, which is www.michaelgeist.ca. You can also visit digitalcopyright.ca. That's digital-copyright.ca. And also Copyright for Canadians. They have a website. It's copyrightforcanadians.ca. Wow.
Yeah.
It's actually been quite astonishing since the bill loomed last December, the outpouring of Canadians upset about this. We've heard it from a number of MPs, actually, former MPs now, that this is one of the top issues that they were hearing about from their constituents.
I'm interested to hear you say as well what the implications are for the Commons, for, common information, public access, social justice. Do you want to comment on that?
I was thinking of something about social justice. In the third world, actually. What we're seeing in the third world is that countries that don't have technological infrastructure like phone lines and wired internet connections and so on, people are able to get cell phones. So cell phones are bringing digital and computer technology to the third world, and they're the computers of the future in the third world, in a sense. And we're also seeing in the third world that it doesn't necessarily cost a lot for people to develop software and content and so on. Unfortunately, the devices like cell phones that they're most able to get are the ones that tend to be the most locked down. So it could have a tremendous negative impact on the economic development and the cultural development and, of the third world.
Mm-hmm. There are maybe a few people listening who don't know, who don't have a cell phone. So why would someone want to unlock a cell phone? What would they do that's legitimate or illegitimate?
Well, right now we have the iPhone, which is quite an expensive cell phone, but it's a new device, I think, that we're going to find, as we've seen with computers, that devices like this drop in price rapidly. And it's basically a handheld computer. Mm-hmm. So it can browse the web, it can have email applications on it, it can do all sorts of things, as you could do with a computer. And I think we've seen that computers have brought a lot of benefits and a lot of freedom to people. Mm-hmm. Cell phones could do the same. Mm-hmm. But open source software, for example, could be locked out from devices like the iPhone. So anyway, I think this is a really serious concern.
And also maybe if somebody, for example, goes on a business trip to... Someone living in North America goes on a business trip to Europe, and you have to kind of circumvent the digital rights management to be able to use it over there. Is that right?
Yes, the cell phone companies, in order to prevent market competition from reducing prices, lock cell phones so that you have to use the cell phone with the provider.
They are so smart.
This doesn't really happen in Europe. You buy the cell phone, and then you buy the plan separately.
Oh, really?
That's the standard. So you can buy a SIM chip. Say you're in Italy, you can get a SIM chip for Italy. When you go over to Switzerland, you just get another SIM chip. You could pay $50, use your existing cell phone. Mm-hmm. That's not the case in Canada because of this practice of locking. And it's rather ironic that copyright is being argued for being enabling the free market when, in fact, it's limiting competition and harming consumers tremendously.
Well, it seems a little like they're driving for monopolies, right?
I think so.
They're all working towards their own private empires. Did you want to add anything to that, Bill? We're running out of time,
okay.
But I'd like to know if you have any last...
Yeah, sure. I'd like to talk about the user rights for a second.
Awesome.
And it's one of the other things we're doing at Free Copyright Coalition. And basically, the Supreme Court has said that copyright in Canada must be a balance balance between creator rights and user rights. And user rights are the exemptions to copyright that journalists, for example, would enjoy. They can quote things without any problem. So we have the lobbyists, the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, the Canadian Record Industry Association, have an intense lobbying effort going on. And it's very excessive, very one-sided. So we want to restore that balance. And user rights are the way we're trying to do this. We're trying to put some ideas on the table. And we want to restore that balance and address the needs of users in an information environment. We're going to need this in the future. Okay, copyright was written, it's been around for 300 years, and it's like we need to move forward with our ideas here. And it's like, so that's what we're doing with user rights. And so there's a lot of dialogue on that on the website, on the mailing list. So you can get that from freecopy.ca.
Faircopy.ca.
Fair copy. Did I say free copy? Oh.
Well, information wants to be free and fair.
That's true, and so do we.
Yay! Well, thank you so much, gentlemen, for coming in. I really appreciate it. I know UBC is quite a schlep. Again, everyone, you're listening to UBC's radio, CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Ifni. This is the Pedal Revolutionary Show. And I want to just mention a couple of events coming up, and then we're going to go out with some tunes. But very important, again, I mentioned Critical Mass, and then I forgot to tell you where to go, so sorry. Critical Mass, every month, the last Friday of the month, we gather at 5:30, we ride at 6:01, and the Vancouver Art Gallery, we meet on the Lions side, that's on Georgia, at about Howe. And it was funny, on the way here, actually, we saw there's a full-on movie shoot with people dressed up as lawyers and everybody on the steps, completely taking over that whole square. So it should be interesting tomorrow to see what happens when the bicyclists descend on Hollywood North. Following the Critical Mass bike ride, there's actually going to be an all-candidates discussion and dance party. You see, the bicycle community, they want to have fun, they want to change the world, they want to do everything. And that's going to be Friday, September the 26th, right after Critical Mass. So go to the ANZA Club, that's 3 West 8th Avenue. The doors will open at 7 p.m. That's actually when the all-candidates debate is going to begin, so please don't dally. The cost is very affordable, and no one turned away. So the lineup, actually, I can tell you what candidates are going to be there that are confirmed. We're going to have Andrea Reimer from Vision Vancouver, Ellen Woodsworth from COPE, Ivan Dumanik. Oh, I'm so bad. Look at me. Ivan Dumanik from the Workless Party. And then we have a couple of cyclists who are going to sit on the panel as well. We've got Carmen Mills, whom you all probably know from her work with the Car Free Days in Vancouver. And Richard Campbell's going to be there as well, another cycling advocate. And I'm going to be the moderator of the panel, so everyone will have to behave. It won't be a debate style. It'll be more of a good old-fashioned discussion. And so I do encourage you to come and check it out. We're going to be talking about, the future that all of these candidates envision for car-free cities, or for a car-free city that could be Vancouver, is not Vancouver, but could be one day, and how we can get closer to that. And that'll be followed by the dance party that I mentioned. So Booty Burlesque is going to be there, Timothy Wisdom, Jack Fruit. I highly recommend coming out to that. Also, I want to mention that Franklin Lopez of Submedia TV is going to be holding an event. There's a pre-party and a party, so look for it. It's going to be happening tonight, actually. So the pre-party is from 5 to 8, and the show itself is from 8 to 9:30. It is highlights from a short history of political videos online, so it's radical entertainment. There's apparently free booze if you get there early enough. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but to heck with it. So it's at 369 Terminal on the 8th floor. They're going to be showing things like Channel Surfing, The Apocalypse, and Jonathan McIntosh's TV commercial mashup. Speaking of freedom with copyright and fun with copyright. I also want to mention one last thing, and that is Farm Aid, which is happening at UBC on Friday. You could have a full day of radical fun in this wonderful city of ours. From 3 o'clock to 7 p.m., rain or shine, please join us for an all-ages free admission open-air festival featuring live local music. They've got the Show Gears, BPM, and the Agora String Band. Also, the BC Klutz will be dancing. And Farm Aid, if you don't know, the beautiful farm on the UBC campus is under threat. So come out and celebrate one of the great things about our city. Thank you all for joining us. We're going to go with a little song. What are we going to listen to, Dave? Home to Hypocrisy. This is dedicated to the MPAA and the RIAA and Thomas Edison. Mwah.
Must open sea. Corporate monsters, many closing passages, tempting heartbeats, 13 years of treachery. Journey's over, welcome home the heroes, offering the bounty of their trade. Useful clothing spun from the golden fleece, for the people free and very strongly made. But something's wrong with them. They will not take our free wares. What's the matter, good people? Why are you so scared? Why? Then one brave soul spoke out, we are not allowed to take your gifts. Hippocrates has spoken, there are many new laws. Hippocrates appears, puffy. You must obey my new rules. First rule one dictates, you cannot give your code away. Γεια σου Νίκο Μπουζουξή, να ζήσεις μάγκα.
Listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, Cookie Monster's favorite radio station.
Good night, Chicago! Brutal!